Looking to be a part of a dynamic company that provides exceptional service in the oil and gas industry? Then consider IPS. Integrated Production Services is a leading provider of production enhancement services for oil and gas producers. At IPS, we are currently seeking energetic and team-oriented individuals with a successful track record in the oil and gas field. Here at IPS, we are committed to building a better tomorrow and for future generations through our reputation of hiring the best professionals and industry leaders to serve our clients better. IPS is offering entry-level positions, plus also seeking knowledgeable professionals with experience in logging and perforating, coil tubing and frac stimulation. Consider IPS for your future today. Send your resume to IPS, 2269 North Mash Branch Road, Suite Number 1, Denton, Texas, 76207, or give them a call at 940-484-4481. That's 940-484-4481. Or check us out online at ipsadvantage.com.
Texans know all about taking what we're given and turning it into something good. But finding solutions isn't always easy. Sometimes you need the backing of a bank like Pinnacle Bank that understands your unique banking needs. Here when you need us. That's the Texas way. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. Visit us online at pinnbanktx.com. Pinnacle Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air, asking the questions you want to know with sports' biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell.
Rick is, I think, just a great guy at handling these situations. I have all the respect in the world for him as a coach, how to manage the roster and do what all of his guys were capable of doing and or not doing and put them in a position to succeed.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
The NBA schedule continues to be fast and furious, but for the Dallas Mavericks, they paused long enough to celebrate and receive their championship rings in a special pregame ceremony on Wednesday night at the AAC. It was another wonderful memory for the organization. And the gentleman we are getting set to welcome in always has the best seat in the house, and I thought did a fantastic job guiding us through the ring ceremony. Of course, I am talking about the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folliwell. And Mark, I have to say, you know, Rick Carlisle said it best, the raising of the banner, the trip to the White House, the ring ceremony, it truly has been a wonderful trilogy of experiences. Am I right?
You are right. It has been wonderful. Unfortunately, the Mavericks lost two of those games associated with that trilogy of experiences. But last spring meant a whole lot to the Maverick organization and the players and coaches. And even more importantly than that, it meant a whole lot to a lot of people in terms of fans, because the city was starved for a championship, and particularly a Mavericks championship, because they had been so close. And everybody, I think, feels such a great admiration and respect and connection with Dirk, because he's been here throughout his career and obviously will be here until the end of his career. I don't think we're ever going to see a Johnny Unitas with the Chargers, or Joe Namath with the 49ers, or Emmitt Smith with the Cardinals, Tony Dorsett with the Broncos, some of those things that we've seen in the past where guys have that one odd year at the end of their careers with another team. Certainly, I don't think that'll ever happen with Dirk. He's ours forever, pretty much. And so the city feels a tremendous connection to him, and that was just one of the many, many things that made last year so special.
And I have to ask you, was it tough for you to hold it together after such an incredible night on Wednesday? Because there were so many emotions. Was it a bit overwhelming in trying to, get ready to call the game against Minnesota?
Well, it was interesting on Wednesday to go through that experience of, I imagine it's tenfold for the players to get done with being part of it, and the emotion and the excitement and the soaking it in, and it's like, this is incredible. And then 10 minutes later, regroup your mind, ready to broadcast a game. And so on my little scale, like I said, multiply that by 10 for the players and think of what they had to do in terms of there's this incredible, extraordinary moment, and you're reliving this wonderful experience, and the crowd is going crazy, and this is, all the admiration and all the congratulations. And then, okay, well, yeah, now let's go get your mind right with playing a game. whenever you play not very well in the defensive end of the floor, as the Mavericks did in that game Wednesday night against Minnesota, then I think that, clearly that might be indicative of the focus wasn't all the time anyway where it needed to be.
Well, I have to say and share that, you know, thank God for waterproof mascara, because I definitely got sucked into all the emotion of it. And there were so, you know, Mark, there were so many special, you know, moments from that evening. But I think my absolute favorite was listening and watching to Rick Carlisle as one by one. I know back in the day with what ESPN, he was an analyst for a season, but you know how he just intro'd the players, showing that genuine love and respect, and he kind of pulled back the curtain on himself, and we saw a side to him that we don't always get to see in the media.
Well, you know, I think that I have all the respect in the world for Rick as a coach and as a person. There is a Rick Carlisle that a lot of people don't see that, you know, has a sense of humor and, you know, is an engaging guy who, you know, knows a lot about people around him and cares a lot about people around him. And, you know, most importantly, he's going to be a guy who's going to care about his players. I heard Eddie Belfour with the Stars say this after they won the Stanley Cup in 1999, that all those guys from then on for the rest of their lives are brothers because of what they had accomplished together. And I think the same goes for the Mavericks. And it's obvious that Rick has incredible respect for what they did last year and incredible appreciation for how they came together as a group, as a team. That was, you know, the sum was better, you know, than the individual, you know, when you look at that roster last year. So I think that, you know, Rick has a tremendous appreciation for what they accomplished and for what each guy brought to the team, because it truly was a team where everybody at one point in time along the way had to contribute in some form or fashion, be it Jan Mahimi and Brian Cardinal getting elevated into the rotation, or Dominic Jones doing what he did as a scout team player after he recovered from his surgery. You know, Rick went down the line with all those guys on Wednesday night, and I thought that the way he spoke about each player in depth, and, you know, it was real, it was from the heart, it was genuine, I thought that struck just a great, great note. I really did.
Yes, and how he referenced Jason Kidd, you know, the basketball genius, the greatest point guard in Mavs history. But it really was, as you're saying, Mark, just a testament to the coach-player relationship and how fundamental it is for the ultimate success on the court. Quality relationships lead to success.
You know, that's spoken like John Wooden, Alyssa. That's what that sounds like.
Just call me Coach E then.
I tell you, but it's very, very true. You know, there is a whole lot more that goes on in this league than just rolling the ball out there. And I know that there is a perception among some that that happens. But the depth of coaching in this league, in terms of just X and O's and adjustments and strategy, is really incredible. And then beyond that, you've got to be able to manage personnel and manage egos and get everybody pulling on the rope in the same direction and being on the same page. And I think that Rick has, you know, been able to get those guys to do that, to buy into what he's teaching and doing. And everyone's done that. There's the philosophy of be ready. And he has had a group of guys over the course of the last 3 years who the Mavs do seem to have a knack for getting a guy who is deep in the rotation and deep on the bench and maybe doesn't play a lot, that when called upon, they're able to step up and help the team produce. And again, I think Rick's probably very, very sensitive to that because he was that kind of player. He didn't have a long career. He was only in the league for parts of five seasons, playing 188 games. But he did spend 3 years on a very good Boston Celtics team, and he always talked about the fact that when his number was called, when he was asked to play, he felt a tremendous pressure to just not let Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and players like that down. And so I think that his own experiences as a player, as you would expect, have certainly colored his viewpoint into how he approaches coaching. And so that's why he's got this be-ready philosophy. And it certainly seems like the players that the Mavericks acquire, to those players' credit and to the front office's credit, that they're looking for this right kind of fit. All of those guys are typically able to do that, and it was never more evident than in the championship run.
You're listening to the familiar voice of Mark Folliwell, the Mavs television play-by-play announcer, and certainly Mav fans, they have a very long memory. They never will forget the contributions in that championship run of J.J. Barea and Peja Stojakovic. It was wonderful to see those guys back home.
You know, I talked to J.J. before the game on
you
Wednesday.
You did, okay.
And he's just, you know, he's disappointed that he's hurt. He's taking his time trying to recover from these ankle and hamstring injuries, and he's not trying to rush it, but he is disappointed because he knows that when, you know, when he has played, he's helped Minnesota, and that when he gets back, he can help the team. But he was really obviously very appreciative of the opportunity to be back and get his ring. When he came out on the floor at 6:30, an hour before the ceremony, he got there about 6. That's when I saw him and talked to him. Very nice chat. And look, J.J. is one of the special ones. I've always had just a tremendous admiration and respect for him. Going back to days when Bob Ortegal and I saw him at SMU in front of 75 people at Moody Coliseum during an under-21 junior tournament called the Global Games. So we've seen him forever, and you know, always admired the way how hard he played. And we saw that in his 5 years in Dallas. And when he got out on the floor about 6:30 on Wednesday night, about an hour beforehand, he came out to the bench to say hello to some people. And the crowd of people that were already in the stands around the bench, they went nuts. And when Peja walked out of the tunnel about 5 or 10 minutes before the ceremony and started getting out to the floor to be part of that, the crowd went nuts. And so it just, look, everybody who was ever a part of that will always be held in the highest esteem here in Dallas. And J.J. became a beloved favorite because everyone identifies with a hard worker and someone who has overcome obstacles and been the guy that was doubted and the last guy picked for the team and whatever metaphor you want to attach to it. I think everyone associates with a guy, the common man associates with someone like J.J. Barea. And then in the case of Peja, his pedigree as a player speaks for itself. And the three-pointer is one of the most exciting plays in basketball, and that's what Peja did so well in his short time in Dallas, especially in some big playoff games, especially that game, the Mother's Day Massacre, where he and Jason Terry went nuts against the Lakers. So people have a great appreciation for what Peja did here as well. And like I said, they'll always hold in very, very high regard every person who was a part of that championship.
Oh, yes, we miss Peja's three ball, no doubt about it. And one more thing before we move ahead. I absolutely love watching Mark Cuban, and I hope this doesn't sound condescending, but, you know, just his passion, his love for the game. I mean, he's like a kid on Christmas Day getting that brand new red bicycle. I mean, he's so much fun to watch, and he really is taking it all and enjoying it.
Well, you know, he's experienced, just like Dirk, he's experienced all of the ups and downs. He's experienced the tremendous successes this organization's had, and make no mistake about it. Even before the championship, this organization had a tremendous amount of success and had done a lot to be proud of. But when you achieve things at a high level, but you don't achieve it at the highest level, you know, there is a difference. There's a level of disappointment that goes with that. With success creates expectations, and ultimately you want to deliver on those expectations that you have of yourself and that everyone else has of you as an organization. So he's experienced the highs and lows, but I always tell people that when Mark puts on the MFFL shirt, Mavs fan for life, it's as true, it's 100% true as it could possibly be. The organization and the team has no bigger fan than Mark Cuban, and no one is more committed to this thing doing well and seeing it through to a championship like he was. And he could be more proud of everybody in his organization, not just the guys on the floor who did it. And obviously, if they're going to get the most attention and the most accolades, as they should, but everyone behind the scenes, because for every one guy on the floor, there's a handful of guys behind the scenes that are doing what they can to help the organization put its best foot forward from a business standpoint or an image standpoint or a basketball standpoint, whatever the case is. And Mark's very, very appreciative of all the people that are involved in that. And I think you saw, you know, definitely a slice of that when he went, you know, was thanking all the basketball staff that was lined up out on the floor last night.
Well, one of his biggest supporters, of course, is Dirk. And I know you had the chance to visit with him on the telecast on Wednesday night. What did he share? And kind of the listeners want to know, I mean, give us an update on that sore right knee. I mean, is he working to get that strengthened?
Yes, he is, and you know, he's been running, jumping, lifting, shooting, doing all of the things that he needs to do to help strengthen the knee. I know it probably is a lot. It's strange for people to understand, well, why does he have a knee problem and a conditioning problem, and the way to get the knee better is to work it harder and not rest it. And I think it's the kind of work that's being done, whereas games took their toll and caused the swelling and kept Dirk from doing the other things that he wanted to do, like come back at night and shoot, for example. I don't think a lot of people realize that Dirk has a routine where oftentimes he goes home after practice, and then, be it on the road or at home, he looks for a gym to go to at night to shoot, to get some shots up. And it's him and another player or a coach to rebound or whatever the case is. So when Dirk's knee was swelling up and he was having a lot of those difficulties because of the frequency of games, then he wasn't strong enough in his knee to you know, take time at night to go do that or to have the kind of lift he needed in his legs to be able to shoot the jump shot the way he typically does. So hopefully what this downtime is going to permit him to do, and it certainly sounds like it, is get the knee stronger so it can withstand the punishment of the frequency of games and the rigorous schedule that Dirk holds himself to. I mean, there's a reason he's a great player, and it's not just talent, but it's a tremendous work ethic. And so Dirk's got a lot of things that he wants to be in the gym and on the practice floor working on to keep his game at a very high level. And he needs, you know, his body to be as strong as possible to withstand all of the demands that he places on it from practice and games. And so hopefully this week of time will allow him to be able to do that. It's a mini training camp, and it's part of a ramp-up process that Dirk usually does in some gym in the Black Forest of Germany with Holger, and we just don't ever get to see it. And it's kind of like when he came back from the knee injury last season. There was a slow ramp-up process, and the ramp-up process was not what it typically was because Dirk had taken time off after the European basketball tournament last summer. And then, you know, 1 week we hear it's nuclear winter in the NBA, and then a few days later, the season all of a sudden out of nowhere is going to start, and training camp is going to be 2 weeks long, and everybody's got to ramp up and get ready. So that certainly, I think, took its toll on a lot of people, and Dirk is no exception.
And you gave a great example in postgame on Wednesday night, talking about this is comparable to Peja when he had some downtime from his sore back and his knee, and he was trying to get himself rehabilitated.
Well, you know, he joined the Mavericks last January from Toronto, and what the Mavs did was put him through a two-week training camp, basically a mini camp where he was going through two-a-days. And it's about getting your conditioning up, and it's about strengthening. You know, when you have these soreness issues, these tendonitis, tendinosis kind of issues in knees and back, you know, a lot of time, the culprit is not being strong enough. And so rest isn't necessarily what it's all about to get it better. It's about getting the right muscles around the problematic inflamed areas to get those muscles stronger so they can, you know, do the things they need to do and work as efficiently as possible. And I think that's a lot of what they had to do with Peja last year to get him ramped up and ready to play, and it's probably a lot of what's going on with Dirk and his downside.
Well, I know the Mavs are anxious for Dirk to get back, and let's shift and move ahead here. Let's talk about the defense for the Mavs, because it certainly has been a positive and impressive stat, 15 games holding opponents under 100 points. I mean, that was a franchise record. You got to love what they're doing defensively, and I loved your open the other night. You said there's reams of statistical data to support what the Mavs are doing on the defensive end. I mean, they really are setting a mark.
Yeah, they had a little stumble against Minnesota on Wednesday, giving up 105, and so the streak ended. But the last 13 games of that 15-game stretch, they were the best in the league. Opponents were scoring 83 points a game on 39% shooting. Scoring is down this year in the NBA. Lockout basketball is about 5 points per game, per team, lower so far this season, whereas teams were averaging 99.5 or just a little over that last season. It's a little bit over 94.5 so far this year. But relative to what everyone else is doing, Dallas has been among the best for a long stretch this year. We're talking about going into the Minnesota game on Wednesday, fourth in scoring defense, fourth in field goal defense, sixth in defensive rebounding percentage, second in points in the paint allowed. They were, I think, sixth in opponent turnovers. Just a lot of numbers. Second chance points were down because of the defensive rebounding percentage. Just a lot of numbers out there to indicate that relative to everyone else, again, the raw numbers, everybody's raw numbers are better pretty much this year because scoring is down. But relative to everyone else, Dallas has been performing very, very well this year. It's a testament to what they learned last year where Tyson Chandler helped show them the way and Dwayne Casey helped show them the way, and that's continued with the players on the roster. And Monty Mathis, the assistant coach that sort of has elevated into Dwayne Casey's to give everybody a football term that they can relate to, defensive coordinator sort of role. Monty's done a really nice job with that, and the team has embraced his coaching style and what he wants to get done and his philosophy on it, and they're looking good on that into the floor most nights.
Well, and one of the guys that certainly has responded, and Coach Carlisle's had very high praise, is Brandon Haywood. I mean, just the presence on his court, he's been very verbal, he's directing traffic. That's the kind of leadership they need on the interior. You just mentioned Tyson Chandler. That was a big, big void that needed to be filled.
Well, you need someone to take that mantle to be the voice of the defense back there, and Brendan's been much more of a traffic cop this year, and that gives them energy on defense, and Rick Carlisle likes the fact that he's out there talking and communicating. And he said, I was talking to him before one of the games recently, I think it was on the road in New Orleans, and talking to Rick about Brendan, and he said he's having fun. And that's an important part of it. He's getting a chance to start. He's had a lot of games recently where his minutes were pretty high, well into the 20s. Did a great job on the recent road trip of defending some good post players like Blake Griffin and Al Jefferson.
Right.
And I think that Brendan certainly has been part of a really nice 1-2 punch at center. Mahimi has exceeded all expectations. I think everyone has to admit that they've been surprised at Mahimi averaging 8 points and 5 rebounds a game and being a presence defensively and being able to stay on the floor for an average of 20 minutes a game this season as well. So that 1-2 punch at center has been A-OK.
Yeah, and I told Bob Ertegel last week on our show that Jan, I think he's perhaps one of the most improved players within the NBA. He has been a pleasant surprise, and I love how he's even showing some range from time to time.
Well, he certainly's worked on his game. That's pretty evident. I think Jan benefited from, he's probably the only Maverick guy in their main rotation who played overseas during the lockout. He played in France, so that, you know, helped him have his basketball legs under him, if you will, and he was able to hit the ground running when the season started. He's cut down on his fouling this year. His per-minute foul rate is still pretty high, but it's certainly not nearly as high as it was last year. And that's allowing him to stay on the floor and be aggressive and help the Mavericks. And you're right, he's worked on his range, and he got some confidence from the fact that, there's another guy who was ready when called upon last spring, and Rick Carlisle referenced it in the ring ceremony. The guy hit two big jump shots, including the buzzer beater at the end of the third quarter in Game 6.
Yes.
The guy gets called on to play in the most important game in Maverick history and really delivers some big baskets that gave the team energy. And then as it relates to this year, I think performing well in that situation gives a player confidence. And so I think more than anything, Jan is playing with confidence and all-around confidence. But as it relates to what you were talking about, confidence in his shot to take those elbow jump shots and mid-range baseline jumpers and be effective with it.
Just a couple more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with the great Mark Folliwell. We appreciate him so much coming by. And one of the guys you talk about, Derek said it in the telecast the other night, that is playing with a lot of confidence. He wants the ball in his hands. He's looking for a shot, is the Big E. Tell us about him. I love just the mobility that he has, and he runs the floor so hard.
Well, Yi was in Washington last season, Yi Jianlian, and he's played 5 games with the Mavericks through the game against Minnesota on Wednesday.
I love him.
He's a mid-range jump-shooting 7-footer. That's his best skill on the offensive end of the floor. He's not quite as skilled in terms of Dirk as putting the ball on the floor, but he's a nice, reliable 16- to 20-foot jump shooter. Can knock down a 3. He's hit 72 threes over the course of 4 seasons, so not a lot, but he's hit some threes. He's a decent rebounder. I think people don't realize until you see him up close and personal for a long period of time that there's a lot of length there. Any 7-footer is going to be long, but this is a legit 7-footer when you're talking about wingspan and whatnot. And, I like that he is someone who can help a little bit now, but it's also a young asset that you have to groom for the future because there aren't a lot of those on this team, and I think that they still feel like he's got a high ceiling that he can reach, that he hasn't been in these great situations. I mean, he's been on losing teams through the 4 years in his career with Milwaukee for a year and 2 years in New Jersey and a year in Washington. So now he's in a winning situation with good coaching, with an organization that knew about him because of Donnie Nelson's relationship with China, Del Harris out of the Texas Legends and his connection to the Mavericks and his connection to Chinese basketball. So there's some people around here that have respect for Yi's game and that Yi has some familiarity with that helped create a little bit of a comfort zone where hopefully he can continue to progress and learn and shine and be a part of the Mavericks' future.
Well, Yi certainly does have a lot of upside, and I'm anticipating they're going to continue to bring him on slowly. And as you said, some of these other players like a Brandon Wright, how they're just coming in and they're, you know, providing quality minutes. We got to love that. Quickly, as we get ready to wrap it up, talk to us about Lamar Odom, because he is the mystery man that everybody's talking about. And what is it going to take for this guy to just kind of get recharged and refocused?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm not sure I really have an answer to it, but we were all in hopes that him starting while Dirk was down would be a little bit of a kickstart to his game. He did play well in the road game against New Orleans, but then barely played in the second half and shot the ball 2-for-14 against Minnesota on Wednesday. So clearly that's problematic. And Rick Carlisle talked about the fact that, yes, it has been a challenge getting him in the right position to succeed so far this year. And look, people get traded, and that's a fact of life in the NBA, and I know it's not easy when you've been in one organization for 7 years, and in Lamar's case, one city for 11 of 12 years in his career because he had time with the Clippers before he was with the Lakers. He had that 1 year in Miami sandwiched in between. So that's an adjustment, but at some point in time, I mean, you've got to move on from that. I think the bigger questions are, is he having a problem adjusting from being a player in the unique triangle system? And that is a very, very unique offense. Is there a problem and a struggle in his adjustment and how he fits with these players in this system? Maybe there is, and maybe we need to be aware of that and give him a little bit more time in that regard. Is he having, is his mind just not right because of some away from basketball obstacles and challenges and tragedies that he had to deal with in the offseason? And I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know if it's for any of us to say how long he gets to be in a tough place or a bad place or whatever you want to call it over that. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is on that.
Well, and I often wonder, you know, if, with the team, I mean, who is he spending time with? You know, I'd love for him to, you know, go hang out with, you're talking about Dirk likes to go in the evenings and go, you know, shoot the ball. You know, maybe that's what he needs to go do is go hang with him for an hour or two and just kind of refine some of his skills and you know, find his shot again.
Well, there's nothing like the camaraderie of the locker room and of teammates. And for, you know, a lot of players, they always say that when you're going through tough times, personally, that the basketball court is the sanctuary. It's the one place where you do feel good and you do feel comfortable. But unfortunately, it doesn't take too long to watch Lamar play and realize that on a lot of nights, based on his performance or his body language, he doesn't feel good and he doesn't feel comfortable yet. And I don't know what that's going to take to get him going in the right direction. But I do believe when he says it, you know, I think it's absolutely true that no one has higher expectations of Lamar Odom than Lamar Odom does. And it obviously is tough on him that he's not doing what he needs to be doing to help the team. And hopefully whatever needs to kick in for him will, because the Mavericks clearly need him to be the kind of player that he's capable of being.
A couple years ago, I interviewed John Starks, and that's exactly what he said. You know, that's where he would take all of his problems, and, you know, going to the basketball court, it was, as you said, a sanctuary and a real release for him. Well, as we get ready to close out the interview, Mark Folliwell, tell us, how are you managing just this schedule as a broadcaster? I mean, you are on the road all the time. Are you absolutely exhausted?
Do I sound tired?
No, you don't, but I just often wonder, like, you know, as a broadcast, you got to have fresh material, you got to keep up with everything. The mother in me is going to come out, but I hope you are not living off those energy drinks. You better not be doing that.
No, I'm trying to get through as best I can without doing that. So, you know, it's a challenge. You know, you got to pick your spots to get your rest, which unfortunately haven't been as often as I would like for them to be. You know, you try to keep up a schedule of some working out to keep your energy up in that regard. And you know, it's a challenge. That's for sure. And whatever challenge it is for me, again, I would say that multiply that by tenfold for the guys that are out there playing. And this is a unique situation, to put it politely. It's a difficult situation for everyone, but it certainly beats the alternatives, that's for sure. We're all glad to be playing basketball, and this season has its hurdles and its obstacles and its challenges, but like I said, it beats the alternative, and like any season, I'm having fun with it. And the one thing I would add in closing to that is Rick Carlisle said a couple of weeks ago that they're approaching this thing that, look, if you approach it that you loathe it and you don't like it, then you're not going to handle it very well. If you approach it as a unique challenge, then that puts you in the best position to rise up and meet that challenge and perform well. And so hopefully all of us can look at it that way, not just the guys on the floor, but everybody associated with it.
Well, and you're living the dream, covering the team that you've wanted to for so many years. So, Mark, we certainly appreciate you dropping by. Thank you so much for the time, and we will catch up with you again real soon.
You got it, Alyssa. Take care.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
The Big E Sports Show with Alyssa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports.
Delivering the insight.
Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else.
Anywhere else.
Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson.
Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum.
And Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show
with Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Miss one episode and you miss the game.
At the start of the game, everyone wants to win.
Okay, let's get them on three. One, two, three, team!
In the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, everyone's a winner. Whether you're an athlete, coach, donor, or volunteer, you can help put the heart and soul in sports by impacting the world for Jesus Christ. Join FCA and stand in the winner's circle.
And that's the end of the game.
No matter what the scoreboard says. Learn more at FCA.org.
Did you know that Complete Production Services is one of North America's leading oilfield service providers, offering field support solutions, equipment, and well production optimization and enhancement to some of the largest oil and gas companies? Complete Production is fully committed to developing solutions for your operating environment and can handle any oilfield demands, well servicing, and rentals. Most importantly, they are committed to superior customer service and also focus on safety and the environment. Service, expertise, innovation. Complete Production Services. Join us online at CompletePructionServices.com.
Working here in the Barnett Shale requires that you have the best equipment available, because every job counts. Put Energy Weld Fab to work on your next project. Energy Weld Fab manufactures oil and gas production equipment, as well as fabrication of custom vessels, piping, and structural steel. The Energy Weld Fab sales staff has a wealth of knowledge working here in the state of Texas and other regions, as some of their biggest clients are folks like EOG, Chesapeake, Quicksilver, and XTO. Call Mike Clements at Energy Weld Fab's team today with your questions and ordering information at 903-297-2500. That's 903-297-2500. Energy Weld Fab is your number one choice for oil field and production equipment because they understand that every job counts. That's Energy Weld Fab at 903-297-2500.
Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Our NBA conversation continues this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. Before we get underway with our second interview, we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And our next guest is Bill Ingram. He is the executive NBA editor for Hoops World. And great things are certainly happening at Hoops World. And Bill, it's great to have you back on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Alyssa. It's great to talk NBA all day, every day. It's a fun world to live in.
Well, of course, we're right here in Dallas-Fort Worth, so the biggest storyline that everybody's talking about is Lamar Odom, and I just referenced him when I was talking to Mark Folliwell in our first segment, referred to him as the mystery man, because unfortunately, he is struggling mightily. I mean, his body language, everything just says that he's so disengaged. I think it was Shaq said it a couple weeks ago, that we're not used to seeing Lamar Odom, you know, have averages in single digits. He's got to boost those numbers.
Yeah, and it's not like he's filling a different role. This is a guy that's been traded multiple times. He has been successful after trades. He's won championships with the Lakers after trades. He certainly has been in the NBA long enough to understand how this goes. We're talking about a guy who asked to be traded. His wish was granted, and they sent him where he asked to go. So he's in Dallas, where he wanted to be. I don't really see a reason why this guy is not in this funk or whatever it is, unless, you know, I know it's been a distraction around American Airlines Center, and certainly I get asked this question an annoying amount of times about these Kardashian people that are doing whatever they're doing on TV. Maybe this aspect of his life of reality TV is taking away from his reality, which is playing, you know, championship-level basketball in the NBA, because we certainly haven't seen that from him.
Well, and Bill, you would agree that, I mean, Lamar is going to be a very big piece to the puzzle. I mean, they really need him to come on and to get it together. I mean, here we are wrapping up the month of January. But as we look ahead, and in order for the Mavs to go deep, I mean, they do have some stuff invested in this guy, and they need him to produce.
Well, they do, because you're talking about a team that is defending a championship, and yet Mark Cuban is very focused on next summer versus today defending this championship. He's let Tyson Chandler walk. He let J.J. Barea walk. He let even Deshaun Stevenson walk, Ron Butler walk. And he has replaced them with one-year contracts with veterans that are a little past their prime, like Vince Carter, who's already hurt. So you really need Lamar Odom is the one guy that's kind of like a marquee name that's replacing that whole group of players. And if he's not going to play up to his level of just his normal level of play, that's really going to hurt them. As we've seen, I mean, last night he started for against Minnesota, he started and really was a non-factor, and that can't be what he gets the Mavericks. The Mavericks are going to have a very short playoff run.
You're listening to the voice of Bill Ingram. He is the executive NBA editor for Hoops World, and as I understand, we're going to pause here just for a moment. There's some exciting things going on at Hoops World right now, isn't there?
There are. We've been in conversations with Gannett, which is the parent company of USA Today, and on Monday, officially, we became property of USA Today. So Hoops World is going to be powering as well as our channel. We own Hoopstype and Draft Express and BasketballReference.com. And this is, if you don't know this family of sites, you don't know the NBA. And we are now going to be powering USA Today's basketball content. And I don't know who's more excited, them or us.
That absolutely is exciting. Well, let's move ahead. Let's look up and down the Western Conference. And what teams jump out at you? Obviously, at the top is the Oklahoma City Thunder. We got the Denver Nuggets. There's some really good competition out there, but there's kind of a logjam when you start looking up and down as far as at the middle of the pack.
Well, this is kind of the way the Western Conference has been. There's been a logjam somewhere. Right now, it starts right around the third seed, which is a little higher than usual. But you've seen so many teams struggling. Shooting is down across the league. You've got kind of nagging injuries, as with the Mavs. You're missing Vince Carter and Dirk Nowitzki. These guys didn't get their normal amount of time to kind of get into the groove with training camp and preseason. Dirk, for instance, is very much a rhythm player to be just kind of thrown in. Not that he's not in good shape, but he's always taken a few games to kind of get his shot going and get his mechanics going again. And that's what, you know, a lot of the veterans are struggling with. You look at the Lakers, you know, Kobe's in vintage form. My gosh, the guy looks like an MVP. The rest of the team, not so much.
Yeah, Kobe can't win every game by himself, right?
Absolutely. But when you look at the top, no surprise at all. The team that made no changes over the summer, Oklahoma City, there they are, right back at the top. And that's my pick to win the West anyway. And then Denver doesn't surprise me at all either because they're so deep, so talented. Much of that group is also back from last season. When Carmelo left, there was a sigh of relief in Denver because everybody gets to touch the ball now. It's not just stand around and watch Carmelo shoot. And that team atmosphere has been fantastic. And Denver is going to be really interesting to watch throughout this season.
Well, Denver certainly has been a pleasant surprise. One of the teams that we saw here that was at the AAC on Wednesday night, of course, was the Minnesota Timberwolves. And boy, things have really turned around big time. And I just love to watch Kevin Love play. I mean, this guy can, I mean, he's got the inside, the outside game. I mean, he is tough to defend.
He is, and not only Kevin, who I've always liked, but Rick Rubio, this is my first time to see him live in person. And that kid, first half he was a little shaky, was getting into the air a lot with nowhere to go, but it's like Rick Adelman sat him down and showed him a couple film clips and said, look what you're doing. He stopped doing it in the second half. He was all over the place, stealing, I mean, pulling Jason Kidd on Jason Kidd, you know, ripping the ball from behind and turning a inbound play into a score for the other team. There's a lot to like about the Minnesota team. And really, to me, Rubio's a great addition, but the head coaching change. Rick Adelman is the perfect coach for that situation because you've got some personalities like Michael Beasley and Darko Milicic that have struggled other places, but they're going to flourish with a coach like Rick Adelman who understands how to tailor his system to the talent that he has instead of trying to say, my system is this, you have to fit it or else. He tailors it to his guys, and that's going to be so great for guys like Theo and Love, who are sitting all over them, but also for the role players that are going to be so important to that team.
Well, and yeah, and they were certainly working that pick and roll on Wednesday night, too. That was very tough to defend. And my final team I'm going to ask you about quickly because we have an abbreviated segment here. What about the San Antonio Spurs? I mean, I know that they've had some rough spots, too, and where they had a series of where they lost three out of the last four games, but, you know, they're missing some key components.
Well, they are. I mean, Manu Ginobili is really, to me, the star of that team. Tony Parker is going to give you a lot of points and stuff, but Manu is the guy, when the game's on the line, he is the most uncanny clutch player in the NBA. But to their credit, hey, with him out, they are still playing very well, winning most of the time. And, you know, Tim Duncan got a night off and they lost that game, but if you throw that one away, Spurs have been doing really, really well. And that's a tribute to that system that they have got so many tough-minded guys. Greg Popovich keeps them really focused on the task at hand. They don't sit around and think about who's not here or, you know, Richard Jefferson isn't playing as well as everybody thought he would. And Tim Duncan's a little bit old. Oh, you look up and they've won another game. In fact, manhandled the Hawks this week, which, you know, that's a statement game right there. I think the Spurs are just being heard from. I don't think they can take Oklahoma City in a series, maybe not Denver, but they could really, I could see them winning a couple of playoff series. Trying to get Tim Duncan's last hurrah here, if it is last hurrah.
Well, Bill, always a dangerous team. There's no doubt about it. We are flat out of time. Direct all the listeners where they can go and find out information about Hoops World.
Well, it's absolutely hoopsworld.com. No matter which team you're a fan of, whether it's the defending world champion Mavs or any of the NBA teams are, what we hang our hat on is we cover every team equally. So no matter which team you're a fan of, you'll find something to like it.
Yes, and that's some great stuff. Bill, thanks so much for dropping by. I look forward to seeing you at the Mavs games, and we will catch up again real soon, okay? Take care.
Sounds good. Later.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead. Get ready to line it up. Talking some NFL with Jason Peter in our Under the Helmet segment.
The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports. Delivering the insight. Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else. Anywhere else. Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson. Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum. And Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell. Miss one episode and you miss the game.